You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Six months, 82 games, and finally, the postseason is here. First up, the SoFi NBA Play-In Tournament. For this, the rules are simple. Win to get in. Eight teams battle to earn their playoff spot in a win-or-go-home style tournament that is bound to be full of highlights, excitement, and drama. There's no better way to set the tone for the playoffs than this, so make sure you don't miss the action. Watch TNT's coverage of the SoFi NBA Play-In Tournament on April 16th and 19th on TNT, True TV, and Max.
Welcome to the Big Suey, a podcast exclusive.
Risky move.
Just when you thought the show could not be more diluted.
Walk the plank.
Bam.
No more free Disney trips.
Now here's the marching band of nowhere.
Matey.
Fat face.
Dan's been stress eating.
And the habitual liar.
Stugatz can't be trusted.
The Big Suey.
Yo ho, a pirate radio life for me.
If you had to pick one, Dan, was Bruce born in the USA or born to run? One of the two. You have to pick one.
I have to pick one.
What would you try that if you were in trouble?
He was born in the USA.
Right.
It's not born to run. It's born in. If I had to pick only one, born in the USA, you would pick born. You'd think he'd be born to run before he was born in the USA?
I just go, which is the better song? And but people misrepresent what he was trying to say in Born in the USA. So I think maybe he was born to run.
Mike, when he runs, he's only running on Thunder Road, though, right?
Yeah.
Sevenwall, why is it that sports writers love Bruce Springsteen so much? What's the matter with sports writers that they can't get enough of Bruce Springsteen?
I don't know. I would say that certainly my love of Springsteen is the closest I ever feel to actually being a sports writer myself.
Okay,
so I've got the same weakness as the rest of them. I at least have the excuse of being from New Jersey.
This gentleman has done a lot of good work for a long time. I am an admirer of his writing and his taste. He is the chief Rolling Stone TV critic. You can check out his podcast, Too Long, Didn't Watch, whenever you get and wherever you get your podcasts. I've enjoyed his work on The Sopranos, on Breaking Bad. When you've written about something, Alan, and thank you for making the time for us, Golden Globes this weekend, you've been most passionate about what show? Because what I've enjoyed about your writing over the years is when you fanboy on something, because you gobble it up the way the biggest and most ardent fans do.
I mean, that's how I got started. I was writing about, almost 30 years ago now, NYPD Blue in the 90s on the internet, and that's how I got my first newspaper job. So I found, like, when you can write with passion and the passion is sincere, that helps. You know, you can't fake it if it's not there, but if there's a great show and I can go very deep on it like I have with Sopranos and Breaking Bad and a bunch of others, it's very satisfying for me.
Well, you've also done some great reporting on The Sopranos. So what are some of the stories? Oh, we'll get into the Golden Globe stuff in a second, but I do want to take advantage of the fact that we've got somebody who's been a bit thorough in some of the historian stuff that he does on shows that are America's most popular. I don't know where those rank for you, Breaking Bad and Sopranos. Is it your top five, top 10? Do you make lists like that?
I mean, I one of the books I've put out is called TV the Book, and we literally ranked like the 100 best shows of all time, and both of those are in the top five.
Okay, wow. So what can you tell us in your going back over The Sopranos, where you are saying this is the most interesting stuff I've got on this show, understanding I'm asking you to cover a lot of ground there?
Well, I mean, the most interesting thing was probably in the process of writing my last book, The Sopranos Sessions, where I did a bunch of new interviews with David Chase, the creator of the show. And at one point, while sort of bracing myself for whether or not he was going to be willing to talk about the ending, he sort of let slip the phrase, he referred to the last scene as the death scene. And then he realized what he'd said and he doubled back and we talked about it some more. And it turned out he was referring to like an earlier draft of it. But his idea once upon a time was that Tony was definitely going to die at the end of the show. And he wound up doing something a little bit different and a little bit more ambiguous about it. But even hearing him say the phrase death scene about this thing that we've been debating for a dozen years now felt like a big deal.
How about with Breaking Bad? Where would you go there where you have to encapsulate it in a bite-sized form?
I mean, there's so many great Breaking Bad stories. The most, like, everything was kind of made up on the fly as they went along in a way that everybody else thinks they can do but can't actually do. So, for instance, they were going to kill off Jesse Pinkman early in the first season, and then they realized, like, oh, Aaron Paul's this great actor. We can't do that. And as a result, like, they came up with all this great material for the rest of the run.
Can I hear the entire top five, please?
Let's see if I remember it. It's The Simpsons is number one, Sopranos is number two, The Wire is number three, then Cheers, then Breaking Bad.
Wow. No West Wing in there, huh?
West Wing is, I think, somewhere in the 40s, if I remember the order right.
What would you regard, as the historian on such matters, the most underrated television show of all time?
Underrated? I feel like lately we talk about TV so much that it's hard to find something truly underrated. I'll go with one. There was an HBO show called In Treatment that they're actually bringing back later this year, but it was Gabriel Byrne as a psychiatrist, and every episode is just a therapy session for 30 minutes. And nobody watched it because, you know, who the hell wants to watch a show about therapy? But it's amazing, and the acting on it was really incredible, and I'm excited that they're doing it again.
Most overrated?
There's a lot. There's a lot that are overrated. Lately, it feels like it's Ozark. Golden Globe nominee Ozark, which, you know, everybody feels really into, and to me just feels like somebody watched a couple of episodes of Breaking Bad and thought, oh, I can do this too.
Oh, but your standard is so high there, because I enjoy it as poor man's Breaking Bad. It is very much a Breaking Bad ripoff, but that the standard, good Lord, Vince Gilligan, that's a work of art you're comparing it to. It's almost not fair.
Well, I think, like, when you watch as much TV as I do, and you get to watch, like, these really incredible shows that have been made over the last 20 years or so, you start to get spoiled. So if you're going to go into that particular territory, to me, it feels like you've got to do something new with it or something special with it. Otherwise, it's just going to invite these comparisons. So, but I'm glad that you're enjoying it, Dan. I'm always happy, even if I don't like the show, if somebody else gets pleasure out of it, because, like, we should enjoy the stuff that we watch.
Alan, what's your guiltiest pleasure?
Guiltiest pleasure.
He meant sexually.
Yeah,
of course. Alan knew that. I mean,
there was a long period where I would watch Pardon the Interruption every day and kind of go, all right, well, they're just yelling, and why am I doing this? And then Dan would be on it, and I would enjoy those a little bit more because it felt a bit more sensible. But even that, there's just so much TV out right now that if I don't like something, I've had to sort of kick the habit because I've got to find room for the things that are good.
Well, what is something that you have loved and you just can't convince others to love it?
I mean, there was a show called The Leftovers, which would be another good answer for most underrated
so
ever,
good.
Which was
so
on HBO
good.
for about 3 years. And I found it incredible. It's a show about grief, though. So again, it falls into, sometimes I really get into these sad bastard kind of series, and I totally get why people don't want to sit for that. But it, to me, the best of that show is as good as the best of Sopranos or The Wire or some of these other things we've been talking about.
Alan, you're right, because there's so much TV on. If you don't like something instantly, you have to punt and maybe move on just because you have to find time and find room. But I'm wondering, did you punt on a show early and then regret it because it turned out to be great?
Yeah, well, I mean, the good thing is it's now easy to go back if you make that mistake. And that happens to me a decent amount now, because if you think back on some of the great shows of all time, they took a while. Like, Seinfeld isn't really Seinfeld until about a year and a half or 2 years into the run. There's a bunch of others like that. And, you know, who has the patience for that now? But more recently, there was a show on Netflix called BoJack Horseman, which was this animated comedy about a horse who was a washed-up sitcom actor. And I watched a couple of episodes and thought, all right, this feels kind of like Family Guy. I've seen this. I don't need to watch anymore. And I put it away. And then I started hearing from my readers who said, no, you got to go back. You missed it. And I did. And they were right. And it became one of my favorite shows.
What do you regard as something that you just don't understand how it could be so critically acclaimed or so popular?
I mean, there's shows where, like, people, like Schitt's Creek, which just won a bunch of Emmys. I don't hate that show. I enjoyed it. I find it a nice show. But the idea that a lot of people I respect and usually am in lockstep with just thought this was one of the great comedies of all time, I never quite got that. I thought it was nice and cute. It didn't really make me laugh a lot.
What do you regard as the highest end of comedic television?
I mean, it'd probably be Cheers or The Simpsons, you know, live action or animation, depending on how you want to slice it.
Well, Cheers. So we haven't been able... Cheers holds up, probably, right? Cheers, we could go
back...
Yeah,
no, I watched most of it with my teenage daughter earlier in the quarantine, and she loved it.
So we could go back. That you can't do with a lot, right? You can't go back into the 90s with your daughter on a whole lot of stuff that's going to hold up.
You can with Friends. I did with Friends.
I don't know. I think Friends is the most overrated television show of my entire existence.
I think Friends is definitely overrated. There's good parts of Friends, but there's other parts that really frustrate me. And to my daughter's credit, she just didn't want to watch it in the first place. So we went down other nostalgic paths.
What do you regard as the hardest thing for television to do? We're really in a glory age for this, Alan. I got to think, you think that the top 10% of what's being made now in television, or top 5% or whatever it is, that it can't be better. It's never been done better than it's being done right now.
I'd say the hardest thing is figuring out the right length for your story, because there's a lot of shows that, like, you know, are 10 episodes when they could have been 8, or they're 8 episodes when they could have been 4. There's a lot of people who sort of, especially on the streaming platforms, where they just know people will keep watching and watching, and therefore it's better for them to make more of it. And it's, these things just kind of run on, and that can be frustrating. But the cream of the crop, you know, your Better Call Sauls, your Fleabags, or Atlanta, those are really still extraordinary.
Alan, I'm a huge fan of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and it's never garnered any sort of critical acclaim or award recognition outside of stunt coordination. Is there a precedent for a show, a comedy show, that's been around that long, that has such appeal, that's been successful, but never actually got the award recognition?
I mean, there is. There's always the Emmys, and we're going to talk about the Golden Globes in a bit, I guess, and they're just utterly ridiculous. But even the Emmys miss out on stuff all the time, whether it's, you know, things that didn't get nominated or some of the great performances ever. Like, Jackie Gleason didn't win an Emmy. Jason Alexander didn't win an Emmy. Martin Sheen didn't win an Emmy. And I love Sunny, and it has absolutely no business whatsoever being as funny and smart as it still is, 15, 16, however many years into it. Like, most shows shouldn't last more than 4 or 5 years, and they've gone triple that, and it's still great. So I'm not exactly sure how they're doing it, but I'm glad that they are.
Alan, I maintain that Friends is just a ripoff of Living Singles. Do you agree with me on that?
I'm trying to remember now which one came first, but definitely, like, Friends was copying a bunch of things. There was a great, like, Seinfeld quote at one point, where somebody asked him, like, what TV would have been like without Seinfeld. And he says, well, would there have been Friends? And they said, yes. He says, how would there have been Friends without my show to rip off? So I think there's definitely a lot of overlap there. And Living Single was a really terrific show.
What are you most excited about with these Golden Globes? What piques your interest the most?
I mean, I don't know. I kind of want to see Emily in Paris win some Golden Globes so they can look even more ridiculous, because this is just the Hollywood Foreign Press Association is this utterly silly group that can be easily bribed. The LA Times ran this story earlier in the week about how, like, for Emily in Paris, they were all flown on a junket to Paris to stay in a luxury hotel for a long weekend, and that's why it got all those nominations. So just be out front with it, admit that you can be bought, and I think we will all be happier, probably.
Best performance by an actor in a motion picture. Please tell me that somehow Sacha Baron Cohen has any kind of chance of winning that from Lin-Manuel Miranda and James Corden and Andy Samberg in Palm Springs.
What? I did like Palm Springs. I would say in those comedy categories, Cohen probably has a chance at it. Again, it's a matter of, like, who has played the game the best and who has kissed up the most to the Golden Globe voters, which is a very sort of different process than the Oscars or the Emmys or anything else.
Alan, we've had Bill Lawrence, the creator of Ted Lasso, on this show. We all fell in love with that show, and it's kind of weird that we all have the people that love Ted Lasso really love Ted Lasso because it represents something for them, hopeful,
yes,
during a pandemic. Where are you on Ted Lasso?
I think that's another one where I like it, but I don't love it. But I also completely understand why everybody went nuts for it, because it's a show about the power of kindness and it debuted at a time, like, the worst year of any of our lifetimes, where, like, there was just so much abject cruelty everywhere all the time. And so here's the show about a guy who's just nice. And because he's nice, he's able to accomplish all of these things. And so I completely get the power of it. I wish it was, like, maybe, like, 10 degrees funnier, and then it would lock in for me. But I think Sudeikis is terrific, and I enjoyed watching all of those episodes.
6 months, 82 games, and finally, the postseason is here. First up, the SoFi NBA Play-In Tournament. For this, the rules are simple. Win to get in. 8 teams battle to earn their playoff spot in a win-or-go-home style tournament that is bound to be full of highlights, excitement, and drama. There's no better way to set the tone for the playoffs than this, so make sure you don't miss the action. Watch TNT's coverage of the SoFi NBA Play-In Tournament on April 16th and 19th on TNT, True TV, and Max.
Where do you regard Aaron Sorkin as a writer, given that he's up for best screenplay?
I think there are some things that Sorkin is great at, among the best that there have ever been, especially when it comes to writing oratory speeches, like, you know, President Bartlett, when he's arguing with God in Latin on the West Wing, those kinds of things. But it also has always felt to me like he has kind of a limited bag of tricks, and he goes back into them very often. And so his later stuff, I tend not to like as much as the earlier stuff because it feels like he's repeating it. And he has certain weaknesses, especially when it comes to writing about women. But like, if you need somebody to just give good speech, there is almost no one I would, you know, ask before him.
What do you regard, Alan, as the best performances, the finest performances we've seen over the course of the last year?
Gosh, hold on. I mean, in television, there was, Michaela Cole in I May Destroy You. She was great on Better Call Saul. Ray Seahorn and Bob Odenkirk are incredible. Ray Seahorn is like the best actor on television, and she never gets nominated for anything, which is, I guess, as exasperating for me as the Always Sunny stuff is for you guys. But, you know, Ethan Hawke in Good Lord Bird, on that Showtime miniseries.
He's maximum crazy. He's just maximum crazy. He's maximum Ethan Hawke.
I couldn't believe he had that in him.
you were surprised that he was able to go grab a character that was just that filled with crazy rage.
It's crazy rage, but also that he could be that funny. Like, I've been watching this guy since Explorers, and he has turned out to be one of our great actors. I did not think he was, like, funny in anything ever, and he's hilarious in this on top of just spitting fire and brimstone.
Alan, when you're watching TV, you're essentially working. When I'm watching TV, I'm on my couch in my underwear eating Cheetos. So, like, can you lounge out like that? Are you taking notes? Is your laptop in your lap? Like, can you relax when you're watching TV? Paint the picture for us.
I can do both. I actually have found in recent years, like, the best way to sort of combat my ADHD and just, you know, the potential to be on a second screen is to treat everything as if I'm watching it for work. Because that way I have the laptop out and I'm taking notes and I'm only focusing on what I'm watching and I'm really enjoying it. Because otherwise, like, it's just so easy to start playing, you know, Candy Crush or Solitaire or texting people or checking Twitter, and then you're not engaging with it. And some things ultimately prove not worth the full attention, and that's often a way in which I judge things. Like, if at a certain point I'm watching a show and I stop taking notes and look at my phone, that's almost the review right there, even though I will, you know, give it to the end of the thing.
Alan, there are arguments that will stand the test of time. There's Marino versus Montana, and then there's The Wire versus Breaking Bad, and you have The Wire outranking Breaking Bad. So why don't you end that argument for us? Why is The Wire better than Breaking Bad?
I mean, I think it's really close, and they're two different kinds of shows, and they have different strengths. Like, I'm not sure there's a performance on The Wire as quite as great as anything Cranston does in Breaking Bad, even though everyone on The Wire is fantastic. The Wire is more of an ensemble thing, you know, has sort of bigger issues in mind than Breaking Bad does. I guess it's, if I had to put one over the other, I think part of it is just because The Wire and The Sopranos came first, and they did a lot of these things before all the other shows that came after them, you know, started to copy elements, and some of them copied them well and some of them didn't. But, like, just in terms of how much story there is in The Wire and how satisfying it is and how many characters could have been the lead of that show, I think that's an achievement that may never be topped, just the density and the depth of it.
And how about Marino Montana?
I mean, I know my audience here. It's got to be Marino, right?
Oh.
You mentioned Better Call Saul, and I thought that it was crazy for them to spin off of that show. I thought it was too ambitious. I thought that it was inevitable that it would fail. And I am willing to say that I felt that it was every bit as good as Breaking Bad. And I don't know if that's an opinion that's controversial, because I feel like Breaking Bad has this mythical status. But because the expectations were where they were, I found Better Call Saul to be a more ambitious project than one of the best television shows we've ever seen.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I love Breaking Bad. I've written a book about it, Breaking Bad 101, and I thought it's one of the great shows of all time. And Saul Goodman was not, like, in my top five favorite Breaking Bad characters. He seemed pretty thin, which Bob Odenkirk will agree with, by the way. Like, he is very dismissive of that character on Breaking Bad. But what they did was they basically turned him into somebody else, and that's how it turned out to be this really great show. And I've talked to Vince Gilligan and Peter Gould, the creators of it, a lot over the years about how long it took them to figure out what the hell they were doing. For a while, it seemed like blasphemy to try to put them in the same sentence, and I feel like that's eased up. And where I land on it now is Breaking Bad has the better story and the more exciting story, and so to that degree, it's probably always going to be the more satisfying show. But Better Call Saul is better at telling the stories it's telling now, just because these guys have been doing it for so long in this world. And so individual moments and individual scenes are more satisfying than Breaking Bad was as a whole.
Not nominated because it's still going on right now, but it's captured a lot of people's imagination. I imagine you have to have a lot of knowledge of the source material to know where the show's going, and I'm not sure the payoff's going to be good. But WandaVision is talked about week after week. What do you make of the ambitious nature of the show and the fact that it's a streaming service, but it's not putting out all the episodes at the same time? So a lot of people are getting frustrated because every episode's on a cliffhanger and you have to watch it old school week to week.
Welcome to my world, folks. This is how we all grew up. You got one episode a week. You would have to wait months sometimes in between them, and it was okay, and sometimes it was better. And I think, frankly, a lot of these streaming shows, because they're made to be watched all at once, there's much less quality control. There's much more of a sense of, let's not worry about what's in any individual episode. Let's just sort of, you know, mash up a big ball of plot and smear it out there, you know, 1 hour at a time. And so those can be frustrating. I don't think WandaVision is perfect, but I love the fact that that show and Mandalorian and a couple of others, like The Boys, are going back to the weekly model and encouraging people to watch week to week and have that time to sort of think about it and talk about it. That's most of my favorite shows of all time ran that way, and you got to enjoy them in that way. And so, yeah, you get frustrated with a cliffhanger, but then it's oh so much more satisfying when you get to the next one. The interesting thing with WandaVision is it's both trying to be this, like, tribute to sitcoms, and it's trying to be in the Marvel Cinematic Universe at the same time. And I don't know that it's doing both of them as well as it could. Like, I think they're, like, really perfectly recreating what these sitcoms look like, but they don't feel like sitcoms. Like, you gotta write some jokes here and there. But overall, I've been having fun watching that and writing about it every week.
Alan, if you like drama and cliffhangers, you would love MTV's The Challenge. I don't know if you've given it a shot yet. Week to week, we don't know what's going to happen. TJ's throwing things here and there. We never know what's going on. People are competing for gold skulls. When are they going to run out? I mean, you'd love this. I'm looking at your list here from TV The Book. I don't see a lot of reality on there. I don't see Survivor. I don't see a Holy Moly on there. What's going on?
You're a real snob. Well, Matt, you're a snob, Seppenwall. You're highfalutin.
I am 100% a snob. I will wear that as a badge. Absolutely. Now, when Matt Zollersites and I did that book, we decided, like, we were only going to do scripted comedies and dramas just because there wasn't a lot of time. Like, there was just no way to compare that to reality, to sports, to talk shows, to everything else. And so that's what we focused on. My worry about The Challenge is I feel like I would have to go back and watch it all from the beginning and all of the seasons of Real World and Road Rules to fully understand the mythology, and just who has that kind of time?
Oh, don't worry about that, Alan. You can pick up. There's some seasons that carry over. There's drama. There's rivalries that go season to season, but they do a good job of giving you new themes and switching things up where you can kind of just dive back in. Plus, they introduce new characters, new challengers season to season. You know what? Just give it a shot. Watch a couple seasons. Get back to me. I'm telling you, you're going to love it.
All right, Billy, I will keep you posted.
Alan, is there anything in the realm of network television that is worth watching? I was looking at the nominations by distributor. NBC has one, and I don't think any of the other networks have one. Given how much they make, is there any of it that's worth watching?
There's a bit here and there. Like, you know, when Brooklyn Nine-Nine comes back for its last season, I will gladly watch that. Superstore, which is ending its run, has been pretty good. Mom on CBS, which is also ending its run, has been pretty good. It's just harder these days for the networks to do really cool stuff because there's more limitations there than there used to be before. So it's a network show has to execute at a really high level to get my interest.
Alan, there was a show on FXX called You're the Worst that I really enjoyed. I just don't believe that a lot of people got their eyes on the show just based on the fact that it was on FXX. You saw the show. How do you feel about it?
Oh, I really like that one a lot. That's one of the better shows I enjoyed over the 2010s. And the great thing is now, almost everything is streaming, so you can watch all five seasons if you're the worst on Hulu. And that's one I recommend a lot. That's a really good balance of, like, comedy and drama. And it's a lot of these shows that try to do both usually wind up not being that funny. This is an explosively funny show that can also be really sad and really touching, and I liked it a lot.
We often marvel at athletes' ability to, during a press conference, say nothing while actually speaking to us. Do you ever find yourself in a spot where people are asking you about a show that you don't really have much on and you just go into the mechanics of faking it? You know, oh, good directing,
he's
good acting.
He's fascinated, Alan, by you as a job. He's fascinated by the idea that you just spout television opinions. He's walking up to you like you would an animal at the zoo. Look at this thing. This thing gives opinions on everything the way the sports people do.
Well, I mean, like I've had to do here, if I haven't seen a show, I've got to say that. And if I don't like feel strongly about it, I guess I have to say that too.
Because Alan,
you don't have to. You know how many games I've commented on that I've never watched?
No, but it feels maddening to be you. There's too much television being made right now. Like, you sound...
To be informed
on everything makes you clinically a totally insane person, because you can't have answers to every damn television show. You can't watch everything.
I can't. You physically can't. Even if, like, I never had to write anything, even if I didn't have to, like, you know, talk to my wife or take care of my kids or anything, if all I did from the time I woke up until I went to sleep was watch TV, I would still get to only a fraction of what's out there because there's just too much now. So it's definitely, there's a lot of stress to it.
Alan, thank you for being on with us. We appreciate the insight. It sounds unpleasant, I'm sorry, to watch as much television as you are watching. Do you have anything for the audience, for people who are dying during the pandemic to have a couple of things to binge? Do you have anything obscure or off to the side that not everyone knows about that you would recommend as get into this, you might like it?
I mean, there's a lot. Brockmire was one of my favorite shows the last few years, with Hank Azaria as like this washed up baseball announcer mounting a comeback. All the seasons of that, I think, are on Hulu now. That's really terrific. Recently, I would not expect this, but I guess I put this into the Ted Lasso category. PBS did a remake of All Creatures Great and Small, and it's just like a veterinarian in the English countryside in the 1930s, and it's just a lot of nice people taking care of animals and being nice to each other, and I felt like I really needed that lately, given all that we've been through, so that's very good. And Apple TV Plus has a show that just came back for a second season called For All Mankind, which is an alternate history imagining what happened if Russia landed on the moon first and how that would have impacted the space race. And the new season, which is unfolding weekly, I thought was really terrific.
And, of course, you left out The Last Dance.
The Last Dance is another one that I think could have been about two episodes shorter than it was, but it was still terrific. What?
That's right. No, you're so right, Alan. That's
I was
good.
Thinking two more episodes.
That's good, Stugatz. Reno, Montana, The Last Dance. Thank you for being on with us, Alan. We appreciate the insight.
Stump the Schwab.
My pleasure, Dan. Thank you.